Scripture in this morning comes from 1 John 2, verses 15 through 17. 1 John 2, verses 15 through 17. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not in the Father, but is in the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof. But he that doeth the will of God abideth forever.
One and all, good to see everybody here. The rain didn't keep you away, or my speaking didn't keep you away, so I'm really happy for that. Along with Chris's thing, just a happy Veterans Day tomorrow. I don't know how many veterans we got here. I fled to Canada myself, so I'm not. We got Art. I know that. So well done. So yeah, I was happy. The Vietnam War. When I was a senior in high school, the Vietnam War kind of got settled. They were signing up for the draft, but they didn't draft us and everything. So and it's the way the Lord took care of me. I didn't know what was going on, and I wasn't even paying attention to all that stuff. So really thankful for all the veterans that stepped up and serve our country there. Okay, if you would turn to Matthew the 5th chapter, Matthew 5, and kind of continuing in my lessons here on the Sermon on the Mount. We're looking in chapter 5 of Matthew, and we're going to start off in verse 13 now. Matthew 5 and verse 13. He says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men." We got this thing here too. Okay. It says, "Nor do they light a lamp." It says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set up on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." So I guess the question this morning for a lot of us, how much influence do you have over people? You might be thinking, hey, nobody notices me. I go to work. I come back home. Nobody says it. So, you know, nobody knows my name. Nobody notices anything about me. But I am not so sure about that. I'm not so sure that people don't notice me. I don't know. Do you guys, well, the young people would be the question. Do you guys remember about the show American Bandstand? Everybody's, that side is shaking. Yes, these are side. American Bandstand was this show that started out in Philadelphia in 1952. I didn't thought it was Dick Clark, but it was not Dick Clark that started this. It was a guy named Bob Horn that started it. And it would appear in Philadelphia on Channel 6, WFIL-TV. Phil, like Philadelphia, Phil, so that's the reason they did it that way. But and he would run this show Monday through Friday, 3 o'clock to 5 o'clock, and they would play all the latest hits, and they'd have about 20 couples of high school kids that would be dancing for this stuff, and the kids had to dress up. They required the kids to dress up; they just couldn't be looking dopey and stuff on that. And that's where they do this thing called Rate a Record. You ever heard the thing, you know, hey, it's got a good beat, and you could dance to it? That's where that came from, because that's all the kids would rate the records, and that was pretty much the biggest thing that they could come up with then. But on this show, and then Dick Clark took over in 1956, and in 1957, ABC took it and went nationwide with it. And then an interesting thing happened. One day, on the show, there were several of the teenage girls were wearing what was called this preppy outfit. These girls, they had these pleated skirts, and they had these blouses with this, what they call Peter Pan collars. Did you wear that, Kay? I don't. She's not going to. Anyway. And they had like these sweaters, and they were dancing out there. And the girls across the country saw these girls wearing this, and all of a sudden it became a fad. All these girls across the country were wearing these preppy outfits. And the interesting thing was, it turned out that these girls on that show were not wearing the latest fashion. They had come from the local Catholic high school, and that was their school uniform. So the show started at 3. They got off school and headed down to the studio, got on the program, and showed that. But people thought these guys were trendsetters, and no, they weren't. They didn't mean to set any kind of trend, but there they were. They were on this show, and then everybody across the nation was wearing these outfits. They had no intention of influencing anybody, but there they were. And we see that today. Think about these social influencers. You see these. I was watching, had Allie visiting us, my granddaughter. And so she's watching YouTube. And I come downstairs, and she's watching something. And all it is, it's this guy's got these headphones on. And he's looking at a video game, and he's commenting on this video game. I said, that looks stupid. And I pause down to see how many people are watching this. And it's got 20 million people have turned on to this thing to see this guy going, yeah, he's really playing this good. And I'm like, it's interesting. It's just like these influences are. But this point is out here in Matthew 5 that Jesus is saying, we think that influencing is a modern phenomenon, but actually Jesus is saying this is a first century idea. It's the cornerstone idea for this Sermon on the Mount. What does Jesus have to say about this? So Jesus is saying, remember the same way we start off with the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is giving his view on discipleship. He's speaking about discipleship. What Jesus expects from the citizens of his kingdom. How we are to be thinking. What are we supposed to be doing? And Jesus is saying right here that his people are going to be salt and they're going to be light here on this. They're going to be an influencer and stuff. So we look at this thing in Matthew 5:13. It starts off, you are the salt of the earth. Who is the you here that he's talking about? Well, go over to chapter 5 and you look at verse 1 and we see who it is. He says, in verse 1, he says, and seeing the multitudes, he went up on a mountain. And when he was seated with his disciples, came to him. And he opened his mouth and he taught them. So he's talking to his disciples. So when he's saying the word you, he's talking about his disciples, and he's talking about us in there. So, and then he gives the Beatitudes. And the attitudes, and these Beatitudes are the attitudes of his people that he wants in there. All this from verse 3 to verse 10 and 11, he said he's talking about what he expects. This is the attitude of his people. And we are to have every one of these attitudes, not just pick one or two and leave the rest there and stuff. So we need to. So he's given these Beatitudes, and we need to become the definition Jesus gives for a disciple. Because Jesus has a job for us to do, and he's got a job for you to do, and that job is to be salt. But I know lately, I don't know if you've heard this term, there's a new definition for what this means. I don't know if you've ever heard that. We got some politician talking about a certain community, and they'll go like, all those folks, they're salt of the earth people. Have you heard that? No, they're salt of the earth people. And what the politician usually means is that these people, they work hard and they raise their families and they don't go around causing trouble and getting in all kinds of mischief. They're just solid people doing good, upstanding citizens. And that sounds kind of cool for a politician to say it. But that is really nothing about what Jesus and God feel about this. So let's get the real meaning here of what it is to be salt. Now, salt is primarily a preservative. They did use salt for flavor. It's really good on chicken paprikash, the dumplings. The more salt you put on it, the better they taste. In case you guys want to make that, that's the key thing. Then you all die of high blood pressure, but that's what it does. But it is for flavor, but the barrels and barrels, the tons and tons that they mined out was for preserving meat. Back in those days, you don't have a refrigerator, you don't have a freezer, couldn't get ice and stuff. So, but you know, so if you butchered a cow, you kind of forced it. We got to eat this thing really quick because the rest of it's going to spoil here. But you can pack that stuff in barrels of salt, and it's going to last for several weeks or months on that. You could store this stuff away in that. So salt is very valuable. That's where we get the idea of somebody gets paid a salary. That's where it came from, salt, because salt was so valuable. But Jesus is saying we're to be a preservative. And the reason we're to be a preservative is because the world is rotting away here. Ever since Genesis 3, with the fall of man, things are rotting. Things break down, things decay, everything goes bad, and it's all because of sinning. And we just look at that, you know, everything just breaks down. You see somebody with an old car, and we look and say, man, I don't see that car very often. That is a nice looking car. And there's, how did you come across this? Says, oh, I had to replace this and replace that and put this in and scratch that out. I had to go find some parts from other cars, and because everything is all breaking down and stuff on that. So now, are we today, in your personal survey, are we seeing less sin in the world, or are we seeing more sin in the world? Yeah, we're seeing a lot more sin all the time, and it's getting worse all the time. If we go to the book of Romans, the first chapter, Paul talks about how bad things are. This is bad back in Paul's day in the first century. In Romans 1, and we're looking at verse 16, he kind of spells it out to us here. He says in verse 16, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also to the Greek. For in it the righteousness of God is revealed from faith to faith, as it is written, the just shall live by faith. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who suppress the truth of unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man, and birds, and four-footed animals, and creeping things. Therefore God gave them up to uncleanness, and in the lust of their hearts to dishonor their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for a lie and worship and serve the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions, for even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one for another, men with men, committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error, which is due. And even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, evil-mindedness. They are whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, undiscerning, untrustworthy, unloving, unforgiving, unmerciful, who knowing the righteous judgment of God that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but are approved of those who practice them. We're seeing less and less sinners out here in the world that are actually ashamed at what they do. They do things and it used to, you know, but They're just flaunting it out there. They're having parades and stuff of the stuff that they do. And so Jesus is saying, you know, that the sin is everywhere and it's spoiling the world. And Jesus here in Matthew 5 is telling us that the world is rotting here and stuff. If we looked at what McCaden read there in 1 John, the second chapter, 1 John 2 in verse 15, he says, do not love the world nor the things of the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away in the lust of it. But he who does the will of God abides forever. We see that in verse 17. What's happening? Things are decaying. Things are breaking down. All of this, the world is passing away. Things are falling apart. So we look at, what do you guys do with that forgotten piece of whatever is in your refrigerator when you finally find that thing? We're always doing it. I'm opening that thing up and, oh, hey, there's that cucumber we bought a couple of months ago. I didn't see that thing. Yeah, what do we do with it? We got to throw that thing out of there. We're throwing all that stuff that's out there in the Tupperware and stuff that we got to get rid of it. The world needs salt, and the world needs us, and the world needs you, and the world needs me. So because we're the salt of the earth. So looking back there in Matthew 5:13. And it says, you know, what if the salt loses its savor? What if the salt loses its flavor and stuff? You know, can salt become unsalt? Salt's pretty standard. Sodium chloride is what salt is. It's very stable. It doesn't break down. But what if you mix that salt with other elements? You know, you get a little bit of dirt in there. You get like sand and that stuff. You know, you got less salt and you got more dirt. You know, how much of a preservative is it going to be? You remember that in Matthew 5:8? It says, "For blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God." That's that kind of salt. That's the pure salt that we're looking at here and stuff. Now, let's see if you guys have ever experienced this. This is you're at work, and you walk into an office, and there's a whole bunch of your workmates there, and somebody is in there in the midst of telling some kind of dirty joke or something, and you walk in. What is the reaction to this people? Do they get a little bit awkward? It's an awkward feeling. Oh, you know, he's here. What do we do here and stuff? Do they get awkward? Or do they say something like, you know, hey, Mick, you got to come over here. Here's a joke I know you'll really like. You know, and if they're doing that, it says, we got a salt problem here. We're mixing it up there. So, you know, is it, where is your salt when we're doing this thing? Is it mixed with the world so we can kind of get along with people a little bit better? We're toning down our Christianity way down, and then we get this attitude. You know, if us folks want to learn about Jesus, they want to learn about God. You know, you need to go over to our church and listen to the preacher talk to them about it. He'll set them right. That's not my job. I'm not supposed to say anything. That is not being the salt there. You know, are you the person who is known by the world as being a Christian? Not the self-righteous or condemning type of person, but that person here, and this is important, that person that when they're around you, just kind of makes sin feel kind of shabby and inappropriate. It makes sin look stupid when you're around that type of. Are you that kind of salt? That's what being the salt is. You know, we get really good at blaming the media for the decline of this world, and certainly they play a big part of it. There was a concerted effort to change the way society thinks on this. But you know, would Jesus blame the rotting meat when he'd see this, or would he be saying, "Hey, where's the salt here? Where's my disciples?" So, what is the bad salt good for? Well, in verse 13. It just says it's good for nothing. It's just to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. So then we look now in verse 14 and verse 16. He says, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." You know, how great it is to have light, especially at night. You know, in Jesus' day, what happened at night? Usually, when the sun set, it's pretty much time to call it a day, and you were going to go to sleep. There's just nothing you could really do. We're going to close this thing down in the morning. But, you know, a little question, can you see the city of Columbus at night? Probably can see that from Johnstown, I bet. You spin somebody around, don't know where they're at, and you look at night and you see this big glow here to the southwest, and you'll go like, oh, that's Columbus there and stuff. And you can really see it. I can see where 3637, I can see the truck stops and stuff from our house by that glow and stuff. You can find that thing. You know, these folks didn't have electricity though, but they could provide with candles and stuff. A little lamp though could provide all the light that's necessary for a room. You know, how much light does a night light give off? When you first click it on, they shut the door, it looks kind of dark, but after a minute or two, then your eyes adjust, and yeah, you got enough light for that night light and stuff. So Jesus is saying, we got to be visible. We got to be seen by other people here. And this is not the only place where they talk about light here and stuff. Let's see, let's go to Ephesians, the fifth chapter. Ephesians 5. We're looking at Ephesians 5 and verse 7. He says, therefore do not be partakers with them, for you were once darkness, but now you are light in the Lord. Walk as children of light. So, and then we go over to the book of Philippians here. Philippians 2. We're looking at Philippians 2 and verse 14. And he says, do all things without complaining and disputing, that you may become blameless and harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world. So we're looking at this. Holding fast the word of life, so that I may rejoice in the day of Christ, that I have not run or in vain or labored in vain. There. And then we go back over to First Peter again. First Peter. So we're looking at First Peter 2, and this, and again looking at this thing about light here. So 1 Peter 2 and in verse 9, 1 Peter 2 and verse 9 says, but you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, his own special people, that you may proclaim the praises of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. We, again, are the light of the world. We are the one that showed people the light here. So Matthew 5:15, it says, nor do they put take a lamp, and then they put it under a basket. Who would do that? You light a light, and then you stick it under something that's going to darken it off there. Now you let your light so shine. Actually, you know, for a room, you might, the higher you can get that light, the more it shines the whole room up in that sense. So we don't hide our lights. We got to let it shine so they can see our good works and they can see God. You know, so when you turn on a light, especially like at night, you don't trip over the things in the rooms and stuff. Yes, I think I'd know my room, but no, I don't. I'm just a few inches off, and I'll trip over all kinds of stuff. So I just have to click on a light, or else I'm tumbling down over it. So when you have the light there, you're not tripping over sin all the time, too, when we know about this stuff. So Jesus is saying, don't hide who you are. Let people know who you are by your good works. You know, we do our good works not so that people will praise us, but that they'll praise God. And because now, when we're doing our good works with the light there, we're replacing what's corrupt in the world. And we're replacing it with something that's nurturing to the world. You know, so you turn on the light, you illuminate every sin, but you also show the alternatives to sin. Let me give you an example of this thing. This is back about 20 years ago, Jeff Lawler, a friend of mine, trooper, and he's retiring from the Highway Patrol. We were over there at the State House. So they said, hey, we're having a little get-together for Jeff. It's over here in Reynoldsburg at this bar and grill. And we're just meeting there, you know, so I got there after work, found out that the place was more bar than grill. But anyway, I'm just in there. And the first thing they go, hey, Mick, what are you having to drink? And I go like, well, got to drive, so just... I was going to go with an orange, but I better go with a Pepsi here and stuff. And I sit down at this table with all my coworkers. And I, you know, that was one of the reasons the designated driver thing does not work that well, because you have to sit with a bunch of drunks. And that is, they think they're having a good time, but they're just not, you know, they're just depressed and everything. But we're sitting there and we're not really talking or anything. And after a few minutes, I go like, hey, have you ever played the famous person game? And they all went, famous person game. You guys know the famous person game? Who knows the famous person game? Okay, here. Chauncey, give me the name of a famous person. Who? Cary Grant. Cary Grant's famous person. So G is the first letter in his second and last name. I have to come up then with a famous person whose first name begins with a G. So I'll go like George Washington. I go around, and then we just keep going around like this until somebody can't think of a famous person. You can get in the car and drive clear across Kansas and never be bored playing this game. And it's just fun because you can come up with all kinds of stuff. Then I was hoping that Jeremy was going to be here because my example for him was going to. So it finally comes to Jeremy, and he'll go. Okay, it's R. You got to come up with an R because he'll go, Ralph Anderson. I said, well, who's Ralph Anderson? And they go, well, he was Ohio's Electrician of the Year last year. I said, okay, you know. And we would laugh like that because like that guy's famous, you know. They thought, I don't know who's Electrician of the Year, but what happened then? We're playing this game. All of a sudden, these folks, they all stopped drinking. And we all started laughing. We're doing that. We're just having this good old time, and nobody's drinking because they showed that thing. And then other people there that were kind of said, man, what are those people on? They're really high. Or said, no, we're not high. We're just having a good time and stuff on that. So you show by your good works, you know, they're surprised that you could have fun without indulging in this kind of sinful activity. They're surprised that, you know, so when you're doing good works, what are you replacing? Well, you're replacing the bad works. You're replacing those works of the flesh. So we trade yelling at people with words of encouragement, with words of healing, with spiritual words. We trade that idea of look out for yourself with helping others, and that God cares about you and I care about you, and we're gonna help you out there. So it's also letting a way that you let your light so shine. It's through the Word here. Psalm 105 says that thy Word is a light unto my path and a lamp unto my feet. You know, we use shining that light through the Word, we can avoid all that sinful stumbling things that people fall away. So, and we can, an awful lot of error is caused because we as individuals don't speak up. We're waiting for the professionals to say something. We're waiting for the preacher to say something, for those guys to be involved with that. When it's you there with them are the light source. And if you can just say something, you can stop this error right away there. So we got to stop waiting for the experts to do this thing. And then light makes change possible. It exposes the folly of sin when we act right and speak right. You know, in not spending our time on selfishness, but in doing those things that's going to lift others up and to heal them, and to just kind of showing care and concerns for others. So, you know, so how can we be salt and how can we be light? Well, it's real easy. First of all, we can be salt and be light by not withdrawing from this world. You ever think about people in monasteries? They're up there on some mountain somewhere. It's hard to get up there. You got to get that little elevator. But they got these really high walls, and they grow their own food and make their own clothes, and they shut themselves out, and they stay away from the world. Well, that's not salt and light. Salt don't work if it just stays in the shaker sitting on the table. If the candle's never lit, it's never going to give off any light. That doesn't work that way. We need to be friends with the world. Now, I was saying friends with the world doesn't mean I'm going to participate in their sinful activities, but I'm going to be there with them to be friendly and stuff. I'm going to show the alternatives there. I'm not going to participate in sinful works to get along, but I'm going to be a real friend. And a lot of people that are in darkness are just not used to that. Somebody is going to be a real friend, going to be a real help to them there. Paul in 1 Corinthians 9, he talked about being all things to every man. He just wasn't afraid of contact. He found out what the needs of people was, and he addressed that stuff. Now we have to have that balance. You know, we've got that example. You know, you got some people that are religious that they're always ready to condemn people and they got the scriptures for it and to yell about it, but they're never there really to help or to speak a kind word. But then you got that 180 degree switch. You got the person that's always friendly, always a good time, but anything about Jesus Christ, anything about His Word, they don't really talk about that, but he's really friendly with everybody, and everybody feels happy to be around Him. We got a double job to do. So we got to stop the decay, and that's the salt, and we got to supply the growth with the light. That's how plants grow, because you put the light on them, they grow on and stuff. We got to show that the works of the world really don't work, but the fruits of the Spirit do. So light welcomes, but anger repels. Salt tastes good, and light is welcoming, you know, but you got to still be able to tell what's wrong. Galatians 6:1, anybody taken up in a fault, ye who are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering yourselves, lest ye also be tempted. We got to be able to stand the ground there, but to do it in a loving way and stuff, to be that light. So in a dying world, people have to know that their only hope is through Jesus Christ. Acts 4:12 says, nor there is there any there's salvation in any other name than that name which is Jesus there. So we got to realize that the world, if the world's going to hear about Jesus, it's going to have to come through us, not some preacher. It's got to be our day-to-day contacts. That is what makes congregations grow. Yeah, you got people that like to see a preacher giving good lessons or entertaining lessons, but what gets people into the pews is your contact with them, and you're saying stuff to them, how you live your life, what are you speaking about. So they're going to have to hear that. We got to be salt, and we got to be light. So I guess the question tonight, or this morning, is, are you salt, are you light? Well, you've got a way to do that, and that is to be a Christian. And if you haven't been baptized and buried with Jesus in His death through water to be raised to walk in newness of life, then you don't have that. Or if you've fallen away, then you need to make things right with Jesus to repent and come back. So we offer you this opportunity here to any way that we can assist you. Just let us know by coming forward while we'll stand and sing our song of invitation.